There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the 45th Podcast. I'm here this week with Siraj and Wajahat for a discussion of everything that happened in the past 7 days.
You mean maybe the last 7 hours? The last 7 hours?
Last 7 minutes, apparently. Just as we were starting to record, I've been informed that John Kelly called Trump an idiot.
What, his policies were ignorant?
Wait, really?
He's the only thing that's saving basically America from catastrophe and from Trump's horrible decisions. And 8 staffers essentially said that he had called him an idiot and he's ignorant. And apparently John Kelly is martyring himself for the security of America.
Like, I totally can't tell if you're kidding with me right now.
I'm not. No, no.
NBC were just reported.
Just dropped it in the last hour.
What a time to be alive, guys.
Wow. So
I mean, it's totally normal, guys. It's totally normal that the chief of staff essentially to aides calls a president an idiot and a person who's ignorant and a person who's dangerous and feels like he has to martyr himself in his position because otherwise the country will just destroy itself. But other than that, I just had some really good fish.
Do you microwave it in the office, though?
No, my friend, this was not just grilled trout. I treated myself to fried bread-crusted trout in D.C. So as long as we have that,
God bless
you. The small victories of life.
God bless America.
And I had a computer meltdown, and I fixed it. So that's basically like a great day, all things considered.
Yeah, and you only swore 7 times in 1 minute.
Guys, I can't even remember what happened in the last week. What even happened now? Monday already feels like a week just came and flew.
All right, let's go back. Let's pretend, like, let's reconstruct the week. Let's go back to Monday of last week. What happened? Off the top of your head, anyone remember?
That's a great question because I legitimately do not remember.
White House Correspondents' Dinner, where but her smoky eye joke is the 2018.
But that's the end of the week. We're going to the start of the week.
Supreme Court oral arguments when it came to the Muslim ban, which isn't a Muslim ban because it's a travel ban, but we all know it's a Muslim ban, except the 5 conservative justices. We also had the deployment of the National Guard at the border to stop this caravan of rapists who are breeding, but not the bad type of breeding, but the normal type of breeding in California. We also had...
was that only last week, that tweet?
I think so. Was it last week?
Honestly, I think it may have been last week. All I really can remember was happened with Kanye, because that's literally the only thing. What was that?
But that was a couple of days ago. That was just a couple of days ago. That was even the beginning of last Monday, was it?
Yeah. No. Well, the previous weekend, Kanye West tweeted his support of how he loves how Candace Owens thinks. And Candace Owens, for those who are not familiar, is a very pro-Trump black woman. And she basically appeared a lot on InfoWars, the Alex Jones website.
Right.
And now she has gained some notoriety, at least with Kanye West. And she works for Turning Point USA, operating under Charlie Kirk, which is a conservative think tank for millennials. It's kind of hard to describe. But anyways, Kanye West, following that tweet, seemed to ruffle a lot of feathers. And then sometime middle of the week, he tweeted his support of Donald Trump, saying that he's his brother. And then he tweeted a picture of himself in a Make America Great Again hat, showing that it was signed by Donald Trump. And then, of course, Trump, who loves his ego to get stroked, tweeted out, "Thank you, very cool, Kanye." And everyone pretty much just lost their shit.
And he name-dropped Kanye over the weekend.
That's right.
He held his rally in Michigan on the same night as the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And you saw a bunch of white people applaud the one black man they really like, Kanye West, which probably is not a good look on Kanye. And, oh, guys, by the way, I forgot. Look at this. Look at what we forgot. Mass shooting in Tennessee.
That's
Waffle
right.
House shooting.
That's right.
Where 4 people died. And it was a one-day manhunt. And they finally found him, and there was a black man by the name of James Shaw, who is the hero, who has raised over $167,000 for the victims' families. And remember last month there was an Austin bombing that killed two people, and there was a Yahoo shooting. And then remember in February there was a Parkland shooting that killed 17 people. And oh, by the way, let's remember also the Las Vegas shooting in October where over 58 people died. But yeah, that was just last week. That was just last week.
And guess what? Trump didn't talk about any of the ones that did not involve Muslims, or at least didn't involve Muslim instigators.
And all of them were white men. Every single one I mentioned except the YouTube headquarters shooting was instigated by white men. But when a white guy does it, it's a lone wolf with mental health issues who's a loner and, you know, is socially awkward. But when a Muslim does it, you know, Siraj is to blame.
Yeah. Just me, though.
Yeah. I'm outing Siraj because he's one of like the rare light-skinned Muslims. He can pass. He's like the unicorn.
This is true.
I always say Siraj is like Blade of the Muslim. He's the daywalker. And then like he could easily make his name like Scott Hashmi, but he goes with Siraj. So it's like a massive.
No. My white person name is Steve Harris.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
How'd you come with that?
I can't use Hashmi because, you know, that gives it away right away. It'd be like
my white person name is Walter Oliver.
That's pretty good, Walter.
Do all Muslims have a white person name? I shouldn't know this.
Yeah, not all of us. At least, you know, white people who convert to Islam can keep their white names.
So what's
so like my mom?
Like Rebecca
she,
Connor.
So my like my yeah, mom, Rebecca. She converted. My mom converted. She stuck with Susan.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, Susan. You share a name with my mom.
Auntie Susan knew what was up.
Yeah. At parties with thousands of aunties, you know, you can basically just call out her name and boom, everyone knows it's her. She's the only Susan at the party.
Two parties. Now you got two Susans.
So yeah, now you got two Susans.
Only one can survive.
This is true.
They kill each other and
Highlander.
Each other's powers.
There can only be one.
Quick, in all seriousness, can I say, with Siraj, when it comes to like, the, you know, I mean this seriously, like I feel like the Muslims who are in the mainstream media, especially on the conservative side or libertarian side, like Siraj's, I feel like my job is saving Private Ryan. Like I have to like make sure Siraj survives. And then like, if I take the bullet for Siraj as I'm dying and he's holding my hand, I say, earn this.
Earn it.
Oh man. And I'll come visit you in Arlington. Well, it's funny because obviously I think people know most people know I'm not conservative. I probably do lean more libertarian, but I do give President Trump credit when I think he's doing the right thing. And just lately, he just hasn't been doing a whole lot of things that are right. And I was never in support of the Muslim ban or in support. I mean, I don't really care about him building the wall. I think that's, you know, a waste of money, but you know, when it comes to things like the omnibus spending bill that came out in middle of March to prevent a second government shutdown, or I guess a third government shutdown, considering that we already had two shutdowns this year, you know, it was $1.3 trillion. I mean, that's an insane amount of money. Republicans seem to not care about government spending, despite the fact that for 8 years under Barack Obama, that's the one thing they complained about was the raising deficits and the raising national debt. And now we're just, you know, it's tribalism 101. It's a great time to be alive.
Remember, Susan, you and I are old enough to remember that Republicans used to be the party of deficit hawks. And they used to also be the party of moral values and also the party of national security and also the party of free market trade. And believe it or not, they were actually – well, that's what they said, right? They were all –
they still say they are.
Do they really, though? I don't think they
can
anymore.
Well, not free trade. But they still claim to be like the moral party. They still claim to be like the ones in favor of national security.
But Russia's okay. Russia can interfere.
That's different. Russia's white.
Well, Putin. Yeah, Putin's a good guy now because Trump likes Putin and Putin likes Trump.
So, Siraj, what is your favorite pair of leggings to wear?
Well, Susan, I'm a dude and I don't really wear leggings, but I know a lot of guys in the NBA and NCAA basketball who do wear leggings.
And what kind should they be wearing?
Well, I've always wondered what type of leggings, but they could obviously be Fabletics, co-founded by Kate Hudson, which is a premier activewear at a great value.
Look, I know you're just jealous that you can't wear leggings, so I'm sorry for you, but for all of us ladies out there, or for dudes who aren't so hung up on it, try these leggings. They are fantastic. They are so much more than workout clothes. In fact, they serve very well as doing nothing in the house clothes, can confirm. And... in fact, that's all mine do, but Fabletics are clothes that are designed to move with you through your lightest workouts and your most intense, or through napping. Whether you're lounging in the house or chasing kids around, they're guaranteed to support you in any activity.
Their leggings are available in sizes extra, extra small to 3X, and in petite, regular, and tall lengths. I can't really vouch for this, but I'm assuming Susan loves how they deliver on the performance level so you can get the most out of your workouts.
Yes, for all that working out I do. But I do love their styles. They have fabulous design, fabulous colors, and changes every month. Suraj, I know we could find you something.
I hope so. I mean, these seem legit. And to be honest, I'm trying to get back into the basketball season and my knees are starting to act up.
I swear, try them and you'll be like, you know what? I'm cool with it. I can wear leggings too. Like, forget gender norms. This is too awesome to give up on. So if you want leggings, you can also be a VIP with Athletics, because VIP is the way to save 40-50% off retail prices and gain access to tons of other exclusive sales and perks. Imagine if your favorite store was offering you a discount on all merchandise for the rest of your life. And all you had to do was visit the store each month to check out what was new, with absolutely no pressure to buy.
You'll love being a Fabletics VIP. So go to fabletics.com/45th now to get two pairs of their amazing leggings for just $24. Seriously, these are the world's best leggings. They're a $99 value, and you'll get two for only $24 when you join at fabletics.com/45th. That's fabletics.com/45th.
What Republicans are really the party of now is, as a recent poll showed, half of Republicans, over half, believe that the press is, quote, the enemy of the people.
Right.
Which I don't know how you continue to be a party in a democracy when that's your overriding sentiment.
But are you surprised, though? I mean, we've been...
Yeah, that's a high number.
I have been raising the alarm about this for a while, and so have others, that once you start attacking these institutions, once you get away with this language of enemy of the American people, once you start making facts into alternative facts, once you start deliberately putting the specter of doubt into everything, and with social media and propagandist cocoons, let's call it for what it is, Fox News, Sean Hannity, Sinclair Broadcasting, this is what happens in authoritarian countries all around the world. And we should pay attention, and we should have paid attention to people who have lived in authoritarian regimes, like people who lived in Russia or Egypt or Turkey. They were warning us and are still warning us that this is how it happens. And when we have scholars who have studied the rise of fascism and Nazism repeatedly write books like Timothy Snyder and others, that this is 101 what happens in group, out group. I will save you from the out group. Trust in me. And then you have propaganda, specifically media, as the arm that does it. Why are we surprised with that poll? I'm not. I'm saddened, not surprised.
I mean, one of the things that Trump will probably... Now, he's kind of sowed this distrust in media. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, media hasn't done themselves any favors in terms of kind of repairing the image that has been fractured in the eyes of the American public. But what's interesting, though, is that now you have stories like what we just talked about with John Kelly calling President Trump an idiot and saying his policies are ignorant and that he's the one guy kind of saving, you know, keeping all the pieces in place from falling apart. You know, by most standards, that was a well-sourced story. They have multiple sources. And, you know, under a conventional presidency, that would, could be considered a legitimate news story. However, President Trump has been able to kind of push this narrative that everything reported negatively about him is fake news. And it, you know, he just waits for the media to stumble on one particular thing and he kind of cherry picks it and says, hey, look, they messed up on this one thing, therefore you can't trust anything they say.
But at the same time, are you saying that that's a... I'm push back a bit what you said earlier about the press has not done much to repair their image. I'm not sure
What I'm saying is that there's been times that reporters have kind of rushed to report a story that have later turned out to be not true. I'm not saying they're doing it deliberately, that they're reporting, they're misreporting here. It just so happens that that reporters get the story wrong. I've gotten the story wrong before, and you just have to own up to it. But of course, there's some out there who maintain the belief that they are sort of, they've taken on this baton of trying to, you know, run against this is a poor metaphor, but really just they pulled the sword from the stone and they're like the one person that can stand up against the presidency. And you see this happen in the White House press briefing room where reporters are basically going back and forth with Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Now, obviously, It is a much different situation with the press briefings now concerning the fact that this administration, compared to previous administrations, has probably lied more than any administration we've ever seen, at least in our lifetimes. So it's
probably you mean definitely.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm not saying probably. I'm just saying it's hard to obviously quantify because they've lied so much.
No, but the thing is this, you can't the difference is this is you mentioned that you own it up when you make a mistake. Trump and the administration never own it up, ever.
Oh, for sure.
They're under the Cohen and Roger Stone mentality that always deny, always attack. And so what's become so subverted, and you mentioned this, they just pick on one mistake, and then they just do a lap dance around the media that just sycophants, apparently, that loves being treated like masochists. Just look what happened over the weekend.
Right.
White House Correspondents' Dinner, which is supposed to promote the First Amendment. They have a comedian who punches up Michelle Wolf and roasts people in power. They pick up on one joke about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, which I thought was hilarious, where she did not mock her eye makeup, but said that she burns facts and uses the ashes of the lies to create the smoky eye makeup. And now that one comment is parallel and on the same moral equivalence of 2 years of intense lying, where now the head of CPAC, Matt Schlepp, left with his wife in a huff, said, "How dare they?" And meanwhile, like Matt Schlepp, you had no problem inviting Milo Yiannopoulos, an alt-right white supremacist who's mocked immigrants and women and black people. And you, as your keynote speaker for CPAC, but the only reason they dropped him, Susan and Siraj, if you remember, is when the pedophilia comment came.
Yeah.
Because thankfully, pedophilia is a bridge too far. But everything else is okay.
That's like that's the one firewall that remains.
Yeah, and so look at all these people, like the White House Correspondents Association president yesterday in a shameful email essentially apologized and said that Michelle Wolf didn't represent the true spirit of the event. I'm sorry, but she did. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders is an enabler and the Luca Brasi of this administration that literally mocks and ridicules journalists at the White House presser, which shouldn't even be called a presser anymore. It should be just called Masochism Day, where they just mock and beat up the journalists. And you saw also the worst aspects of the media come to play, this incestuous orgy of ugly trolls, the Caligula for nerds, this like butt kissery, and then some of them got so like terrified with insecurity and losing access and privilege that they turned on Michelle Wolf. And I was like, my God, this is why people across the aisles really have no respect for the DC elites, because they see it as a big circle jerk.
Oh, for sure.
At least the White House correspondents. I mean,
the White House correspondent. It's ridiculous. It was so painful to watch that and to see people cave to this administration.
Far be it from me to at all suggest that what we have in the media right now is an ideal situation. But at the same time, the mistakes are going to happen. Perfection is ideal. That'd be great, sure. But in any universe, the press will make mistakes. So that's a given. What Trump and them are hoping to do is to use the fear of making any mistakes to prevent them from doing their jobs. And they're succeeding in doing it. And going back to Trump as his bigger strategy here is that he basically rules through humiliation by somehow, and he has a knack for it, it's a real talent, somehow convincing others to offer up their dignity to him for whatever sort of, God knows what they're getting out of it or what they think they're getting out of it, because they're not gonna. But the press has played right into that. They appear at those briefings. They appear and ask questions. They pretend that they're, you know, trying to investigate or trying to, you know, be neutral arbiters. But really, they're there in this massive charade with Sarah Sanders, pretending it's a democracy and helping. Oh, sorry, it's still a democracy, but pretending like this is the normal situation in a democracy and helping Trump continue it.
And Michelle Wolf's most biting and, I think, accurate comment of the night was towards the end. And I'm a member of the media, and our criticism towards us is well deserved. She said, "You helped create this monster, and now you profit off of him." And I think that cut really deep, and that's why a lot of the elites turned. And there are a lot of people there, by the way, who are like fellow nerds and Morlocks and trolls like us, like really good journalists. We're just happy to get happy to get like, except Siraj. Siraj is the, you know, he's Blade. But, you know, us nerds, you and me, Susan, who voluntarily tried out for AP classes. There are a lot of good journalists who do.
I really like how you assume that about me when it's totally not true.
It's not true? Oh, wow. I was giving you a compliment. My bad. I thought you were one of me. Hey, I thought you were one of us.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Waj, I actually was a bio pre-med major throughout college, graduated with a degree in biology, and went
you're
to
just
Georgia.
An overachiever now. Now you're just bragging.
No, I'm just saying I didn't like doing medicine, so I went to journalism.
And he disappointed his Pakistani parents and Susan.
It was his mom who converted
to Pakistanism.
It was an initial disappointment, no less.
For a lot of us, it's hard to find a bigger fan of you than your mom. She's been through all the teenage angst, the tough steps of adulthood, everything that comes afterwards, everything comes before that. Well, she's been there supporting you every step of the way. So this Mother's Day, you can show her just how much you appreciate all her dedication with 1-800-Flowers.com. Right now, when you get ahead of the Mother's Day rush, 1-800-Flowers is giving you an exclusive 24 for 24 offer. You get 24 multicolored roses for only $24. That's only $1 a rose. You get a bright and beautiful mix of premium roses in a rainbow of colors, and these blooms are guaranteed to show mom just how much she's loved. It is the perfect way to surprise all of the moms in your life. Whether it's your wife, aunt, sister, grandma, she will love this beautiful arrangement of 24 roses. Now, don't put this off. You got to order today from 1-800-Flowers.com to get this deal. It's what mom would want you to do. So to order 24 stunning multicolored roses for only $24, go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click the radio icon, and enter the code 45th. Once again, that's 1-800-Flowers.com. Check out code 45th.
This really pained me.
Which
part? To see the White House Correspondents Association, again, like you were saying, Susan, they play to Trump's rules. They bended. And the president then bended and mocked and like kind of threw Michelle Wolf under the bus. And these guys are kissing up to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who will mock them this week when the presser happens.
Right.
And they'll sit there and take it for the access. And what gets hurt? Truth, democracy, the free press, institutions, and who walks away scot-free? Donald Trump, who does not play by any rules.
That gets to the greater point of that, you know, a lot of these media companies are centered on, you know, money first and what drives sales, clicks, ad revenue, and losing access to the White House in this time, particularly with the Trump White House, when everyone's eyes are focused on this White House. That's huge. I mean, that hurts business, and that's a high price to pay for a lot of these White House correspondents for standing up for something they may believe deep in their heart of hearts, but they can't stand to, you know, not put food on the table or support their families or what have you. And as Waj was saying, yeah, the truth gets sacrificed, you know, principles get sacrificed. And I'm sure people will look back on this weekend as probably one of regret.
I'll be honest, I have never watched the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and I was not about to start now. So I did not see it. I'm not going to see it.
I didn't watch it either. I'm not a huge fan of it.
You should watch the set. Her 19-minute roast, I thought was on point.
I saw the bit about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and I was just like, it's okay. I mean, it doesn't make me want to watch the rest of it. And I didn't think like it was particularly insulting of Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her appearance. I know some people are arguing that she absolutely made fun of her appearance, but I feel like if she's a comedian, Michelle Wolf making fun of other people's appearances, and let alone, you know, roasting pretty much everybody,
Democrats,
Republicans, media,
MSNBC, CNN.
I just feel like people in this town don't really have a sense of humor at all. And, and in this industry, you need to have a really thick skin. So like for people to have, you know, to get so uptight about it, you know, it's pretty laughable. And, you know, basically everyone outside the Beltway does not care about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Literally only journalists and the DC elite care about it.
But you know what? I hate the double standard, Susan and Siraj, because what we were told as people of color, and if you notice something, notice the journalists who have really stepped up. It's the people of color and minorities, because the Trump administration is not just an intellectual masturbation fest for the rest of us, where you can get like some ratings and do a WWE good guy versus bad guy. The comments, the rhetorics, the policies affect us personally, affect our communities, affect our families. We're the ones who, even though we're not welcomed, always have to be welcoming and do things better. And we're the ones, and also women are the ones who are like, listen, stand up to this guy, right? And because we're forgetting, while this was happening, where was Donald Trump? He was in Michigan. doing a rally yet again where he asked, are there any Hispanics here? Where are there not too many Hispanics? Okay. And then he launched into this congratulatory comment about Kanye and talked about the wall. And at that same rally held on the same day of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, he did what? Mocked the free press and journalists.
That's a pretty good impression of Trump, by the way. I gotta hand it to you.
It's the greatest impression. Very best impression.
You really got the cadence down, and you know the tone is good. I wish I could be as good as you on. I'm like really good with Bora, like my wife, that kind of thing. But like Trump, I can't do.
Siraj, do you want to be the new chief of staff? I like your style.
I'm not even going to attempt.
Kelly?
I'm not even going to attempt to do a Trump impression just because I'll embarrass myself. But I'll work on it. And next time we're on the air, watch. I'll flex it out. Garage. I'll flex it out for you.
Wait, Susan. Also, guys, I forgot. You guys mentioned what other story dropped. Huge story. Mike Pompeo is our new Secretary of State.
Oh my God! That, how do we even like pass that over? Okay, yeah. There was the whole will they, won't they? Of course, they did confirm him.
And guess who voted yes for him? Any takers?
All of the vulnerable Democrats in the Trump states.
And I was gonna give you one name. Take a guess. Anyone?
Gosh, I think it was just I wasn't surprised. But I haven't done an audit of it. I really didn't. Do you know Susan?
No, well, I don't know. Who are you talking about, Siraj?
Doug Jones. I mean, Wajaha was right.
Oh, yeah, Doug Jones.
Doug Jones, newly elected senator from Alabama who beat Roy Moore. So, you know, yay, Roy Moore isn't in the Senate, but, you know, Doug Jones is just voting for the, Pompeo. And
okay, I get it. I get the logic, like you know, the vulnerable Dems are doing that. But at the same time, part of me is like, really? Are there any, like, swing voters in red states who, like, care that much about Mike Pompeo being confirmed? That they're going to vote based on that.
It goes back to the whole like swampiness about how politicians only care about getting reelected. And that's very, I mean, it's pretty much true. No, I mean, it's not okay. I mean, if politicians had term limits or in the sense that they could only serve one term and boom, they're out, I think they probably would be a little bit more honest with their votes rather than, voting for something that, you know, they truly don't believe in, but only do it so they can get the votes.
There's value to having them chosen to like be responsive to democracy as well. So I'm not sure that it's necessarily a bad thing that they vote in ways they think that their voters are going to want.
But you have a guy like Rand Paul who all the time says he's not going to vote for someone as hawkish as Mike Pompeo. And then all of a sudden, with some assurances from President Trump, he votes for Mike Pompeo. So like
Susan Collins, she got assurances. So that's why she went for it.
Yeah. And people.
So did Corker. He got assurances. And so did Flake.
And that's the thing is like how valuable really is an assurance from President Trump. And I mean this honestly because, you know, the guy is known for lying or not keeping his promises. Sure, a lot of his, you know, brown nosing supporters would probably say that he has absolutely kept his promises. He has not kept all of his promises. He hasn't done everything he said he was going to do day one. And I say that out of a place of wanting him to be a good president because I want the country to succeed. And there are things that he's just doing that aren't really helping the country out.
And I think, Susan, you know, to go to your point, the reason why they do it, and no one wants to really admit this, but the Republican Party has become the party of Trump. It has. And Republicans dyed in the wool who feel like this will end and they'll go back to normalcy, I think they're going to have a rude awakening because George Will is now in the wilderness. Bill Kristol is a Ronin. Jennifer Rubin is out.
They kicked Eric Erickson off Red State.
Eric Erickson is off of Red State.
Eric Erickson left long before they had the purge.
Oh, but they closed his account down or something.
He's an outlier.
I mean, he's an outlier, but I'm just saying, like, there was a purge this past week at Red State, and they kept some Never Trump writers, but they let go of only Never Trump writers. So, yes, a lot of these publications are thinking of money first, and they realize that Never Trumpism is not a way to sell clicks or ad revenue or magazines or newspapers unless, you know.
And it's what you said, Siraj, also. It's tribalism. I think we're witnessing it, and I think that's the reason why they went for it, Susan, is if we go against Trump, he will signal us out, we will get bullied, and we will have to fall in line. And this is exactly what we warned Republicans for the past 2 years. They thought Trump will come in. Don't take him literally. Don't take him seriously. He's still learning. He's a 71-year-old man still learning. He'll become presidential, and we will moderate him. That's not what happened. he came in as a bulldog, just on a tear. And with his personality and the type of white nationalism and anger that buoyed him to the White House, he's tearing everything down. And that is now the Republican base. And he will use the pulpit of the commander in chief as a bully pulpit to punch down against everyone: Republicans, law enforcement, FBI, DOJ, judges, lawyers, allies, the press. And that's why you have to resist this. And I think Republicans, unfortunately, to make the analogy to the media, helped create this Frankenstein monster over the past 20, 30 years. And the Frankenstein monster has escaped and now attacked the laboratory and attacked the United States of America. They cannot control him. And I'm also going to go ahead and say this: the gin is out of the bottle, because after Trump, there will be a more slick, more young, more polished version of a white nationalist who will rally around this anger and sentiment. And that's going to be the face of the Republican Party. I hope I'm wrong. I don't think I am. A full-on Nazi is running in Illinois. A Nazi.
Yeah. Well, here's the cold, hard truth. Trump is objectively incompetent, objectively irrational, and just a ranty old man with no plans and no real strategy. And yet, over half of white people in this country still approve of his performance. So, in the Trump era, mornings often start with a tweet storm, a Trump tweet storm. And while you're enduring his rantings, either on Twitter or on Fox News, it's nice to sling good in your life, like coffee.
Blue Bottle Coffee provides the most delicious coffee in the world right to your door.
It is fresh and delicious, and it gets you through those mornings when basically you're worried he's going to start World War III via tweet.
Or it'll make you realize that you've been drinking subpar coffee your entire life.
Because after trying Blue Bottle Coffee for the first time, you'll realize that there's coffee and then there's Blue Bottle Coffee. What's the difference? Well, for starters, Blue Bottle has insane dedication to coffee. They search the planet far and wide to secure exclusive relationships with independent growers all over the world and source only the most delicious and sustainable coffee.
And nobody takes freshness as seriously as Blue Bottle. That's why they roast and ship your coffee beans within 48 hours of roasting, so they arrive at peak freshness. Worried about flavor? Don't be. Take Blue Bottle's coffee match quiz to find the perfect coffee just for you.
So hurry to bluebottlecoffee.com/45 for $10 off your first subscription order. That's bluebottlecoffee.com/45. bluebottlecoffee.com/45.
I think, and speaking from knowing a lot of Trump supporters and conservatives who, like me, are critical of the president, but also think that things he's done have help the conservative movement, that they like the aspects of, like, you know, lower taxes. They're not a fan of obviously getting into a trade war, although there have been a few conservatives who have probably, you know, walked it back in the sense that they think a temporary trade war is good for the United States.
Siraj, are you talking about like general voters here or like conservative media types? Because
I think it's a mix of both, honestly, because there are people who legitimately feel that everything Trump is doing is right, and I think those are probably, I think those are the, you know, the average Trump supporter. Very few of them will actually back away from him. Actually, you know what's interesting? So, and Waj, you probably heard the story maybe a month or so ago. A Trump supporter and her, I want to say her sister or her friend and their two children, they went and like put up pamphlets in the Arizona mosque, or they vandalized it. And they basically wanted to kick all Muslims out. And what was interesting is she got arrested for like trespassing and vandalism. And just like maybe like 6 months prior to that, I had actually interviewed her at a Trump rally. So it was one of those like weird things that, you know, like she was one of those people that after Trump basically had a discussion with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer on reauthorizing DACA. You know, that was a huge blow to his base. But for someone like her, she was disappointed, but she wasn't off the Trump train. So like that was kind of like the main sentiment I got from a lot of Trump supporters, that they were disappointed, but they haven't completely, you know, left the Trump camp. And I know a few people who are probably a little bit more married to the America First agenda rather than to, you know, the Trump base. People like Ann Coulter, who have been off the Trump train for a while because they understand that Trump isn't actually going to do anything to move the needle in the direction that they think he was going to with respect to, like, building the wall.
Not Nazi enough, basically.
Yeah, not Nazi enough. Not
well,
Nazi
the
enough.
Building...
I mean, you know what? But can I say this?
Sure.
Look, people who were covering the election like myself for 2 years, and especially people of color, said take Trump literally and seriously. I went and talked to Trump supporters, and we said, please listen to us. It is not economic anxiety. It is not the hillbilly elegy. This is mostly racial anxiety and specifically white anxiety. Now, finally, after 2 years, another big story that broke in the last week alone is the New York Times finally did a feature on the study that shows that it was indeed racial anxiety that motivated white voters for Trump, not economic anxiety. In fact, low-income voters across the board went for, wait for it, Clinton. So the very real Americans drinking real coffee in real diners in real states had no problem voting for a president who was very, really racist and encapsulated their rage and their anger because they feel that is now a zero-sum game, us versus them, and Siraj and his mom and me and Rabia will, quote, replace them. It's us versus them. And 51% of white Americans now, according to NPR, think that they are, wait for it, the most oppressed group in America.
No, 51%.
Yes, 51%. And millennials, and people say, oh, have faith in the millennials. Yes, the millennial whites are really good when it comes to, like, same-sex marriage and gender equality and climate change, but most of millennial whites share the same racial attitudes as older whites. And so the rest of us fake Americans, I guess we're replicants from Blade Runner, you know, our lament and worries and fears were ignored. And everyone tells us, the hillbilly elegy. But nope, it's not the hillbilly elegy, guys. This is the reason why Trump won. It's because of this racial resentment and fear and panic that he deliberately preyed upon and manipulated and used. So did Steve Bannon against the Mexicans, the Muslims, the women, and the blacks. And we have to talk about this because everyone wants to go to his post-racial society and reconciliation. But in order to get to reconciliation, you need to go through truth. I think the main thing that his base wants, let's be honest, ain't the trade stuff. It's the wall. It's the ban. It's the limiting
less
of
brown
legal,
in general.
Yeah, less brown, legal and illegal immigration. It's go against the gays. It's silence the women. And we have a core of America, I would say 30 to 35%, that thinks of this. And so, what do we do? How do we inoculate them? How do we reach out to them, or do we resist them? And I don't think people are really thinking about this seriously.
I'm just curious how. Yeah, and I agree with a certain part of what you're saying with respect to, you know, the racial anxiety that seems to captivate at least a part of his base. But you also can't ignore that there are obviously people who within his base legitimately just have the economic anxiety without all the racial aspects. And what's interesting is considering this past election in 2016, Trump seemed to actually do really well with African-Americans and Hispanics. And I'm wondering, Wajah, how you would justify or how you would rationalize them voting for Trump and not casting them aside as being racist, considering the fact that Trump's record with minorities, considering, you know, what we had with Charlottesville and, you know, his deals in business and owning real estate and not being too kind to minority renters, how they would rationalize voting for Trump.
I don't buy that study. I've heard that again and again, but Trump is the most historically unpopular president in modern history. And if
I'm not citing a study. Yeah, I'm citing poll numbers from.
No,
you know,
but if you look at the black voters, it's very low. If you look at the Latino voters, yes, he got some based on.
But he got more than Mitt Romney and John McCain.
You know, and when I went to the Trump rally, it was very interesting. I talked to a Latino woman who had come from Honduras, and it's very interesting. This is what she said: "I'm for Trump because I came to this country through the legal processes and I did all the right work, and all these illegals are getting ahead of the line ahead of me. And so if Hillary Clinton wins, I'm going to go back to Honduras." And there was this intense loathing of Hillary Clinton. So I thought, like, they literally made her shaitan, and shaitan is Arabic for the devil. Like, literally, I asked them, I said, is Hillary Clinton even a human? And some people said, I don't think so. I said, where was she made? They said Russia or China. Oh, and then they literally said,
Alex Jones.
Yeah. And so you have a confluence of the Democrats effed up. Hillary should have taken a plane ride to Michigan and Wisconsin, Russia interference, fake news. But if you look at all the studies in aggregate, it wasn't the income. It was whites across the board, upper class whites, middle class whites, suburban whites, low income people across the board, white low income, brown low income, black low income went for Clinton. And so we have to take into account that primarily, not exclusively, primarily the motivating factor for Trump was this rage and anger. And yes, economy was there for some people. Jobs were there for some people. Immigration was there for some people. But if you relook at the base, evangelicals, 82%, 65% of white evangelicals, 65% of white Catholics, white upper class, white educated, white not educated. And yes, some Latinos and a few African-Americans, but we take it really as the core. If we really want to look at the driving factor, we cannot ignore this, white rage. And if you look at the two factors that changed this study also, last thing I'll say, the two factors that changed white Obama supporters over to Trump. Does anyone know what the two issues were? Take a guess.
The wall.
The wall, immigration, and national security Muslims.
Interesting.
Yeah, I will never make the case that all Trump voters are racist or all Trump supporters are racist, because they're not.
Oh, no, I know both of you are. I am just genuinely intrigued to get your thoughts about how, you know, someone like Kanye West, a prominent black man who's been highly critical of President George W. Bush and Mitt Romney. And Republicans in general.
You can't use Kanye West. You can't play the Kanye
card. I'm not trying to play the Kanye West card, but like someone like him, he's obviously not racist, but like, and I understand he's a mega celebrity. So of course, facts don't really matter. But to the average, you know, African American, Hispanic, or even Muslim, for example, who voted for Trump, do you think that there's any legitimacy that they really wanted to just shake things up because they were tired of the norms?
Yes, I do.
Sure.
But I don't think – let me put it this way. Not all Trump supporters or voters were racist, but they had no problem voting for a racist president. And that's problematic.
And that's fair.
Muslims, I talked to a Muslim South Asian uncle. This is what he said. Beta – I can do this accent, Susan. You can't, because then you'd be racist. He said, beta, son, I voted for this Trump because he's a businessman and he's going to – like you said, Suraj, shake stuff up. And he's also going to go after, wait for it, those damn Mexicans who come here illegally, and also the gays, because this gay marriage is a moral crisis and everyone's becoming gay, and he's going to go after the gays and the Latinos. And I'm I'm going to go get a chai and take a red pill and the blue pill.
So I recently got a new Razorback bra from Third Love, and it's fantastic. And that's probably because the company knows what it's doing. It's made by women and for women. Its co-founder and CEO, Heidi Zack, was frustrated by bra shopping experiences and a drawer full of bras that didn't fit right. So she knew there was an opportunity there to build a better bra, and one that could fit perfectly. And that's Third Love. They are tailored to have a better fit, and they are tailored for comfort. Armed with measurements of millions of women, Third Love scrapped the standard bra cup size molds and developed their own. These bras are designed to fit real women. So go to Third Love now and take their Fit Finder quiz. Answer a few simple questions and find your perfect bra fit. Also, it's a small detail, but one I didn't realize I needed in my life. Third Love bras don't have tags. No itching tags. It's a miracle. Not to mention the straps that don't slip, ultra soft smoothing fabrics, and lightweight memory foam cups. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they are offering our listeners 15% off for your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/45th now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off. Trump's, like, the racist core is far too large. It's larger than I would have guessed in 2015. It's scary big, but, like, on the worst day, it's maybe 25-30% of the hardcore, like, full on, we'd vote for the Nazi if he was on the ballot. Vote as long as Hillary was opposing him. But with a problem, now, you know, that's again, I'm not going to downplay how disturbing that is. But on their own, that 30-32% can't do anything in a democracy. They can't do much. The problem is that there are people who think that Trump supports other ideas they have. And Trump has so many random ideas that God knows there's probably something in there a lot of people can find to agree with. And it's their willingness to vote for Trump despite the fact his racist policies that has put us where we are now. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter why you vote for the racist. You can have all kinds of motivations and rationales, but at the end of the day, you're voting for the racist and you own that.
So looking ahead,
but Susan,
go ahead.
Can I just say one real quick thing? Another explanation is, and we should be honest and clear about this because they said this, is the following. Steve Bannon had said it, evangelical Christians say it, and also Republicans say it. Donald Trump is our, quote, blunt instrument. Steve Bannon said he's a blunt instrument. I don't think he gets it.
Looking ahead, 2020, I know it's very early to talk about possible upset of Donald Trump in the reelection campaign. I thought he wasn't going to run for reelection. Of course, everything is wrong that I've predicted. So what's the point of predicting anything anymore? So I'm going to defer it to you guys. Who has the best chance, honestly, of beating Trump in a head-to-head?
At this point, I don't think we know. There's no one who's really stepped up to the plate the way I would have hoped.
He just destroys everybody who comes at him.
And also, there's people who aren't even going at him that you might have hoped would. He is unpopular. I think that the odds are against him winning again. But at the same time, he absolutely can win again. No matter how terrible he's doing, no matter how horrible things are going, it's a very real possibility he will win again.
I think he will win again. I don't know. I don't think a Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren or even, God forbid, Hillary Clinton never ran again. Cory Booker, Kamala Harris. I don't think any of them really, or even Bernie Sanders. I don't think any of them really stand a chance against him now. They've tried the, you know, when they go low, we go high approach in 2016. And of course, Hillary Clinton, who was a very flawed candidate, just did not do well at all. And the Democrats obviously should take
it. Okay, she won the popular vote by 3 million. So, I mean, we could talk about Hillary being a flawed candidate. Okay, she lost, absolutely. The idea that, we have to stress that she's a flawed candidate every turn when she won by 3 million.
That's just an opinion that she's a flawed candidate.
I think he's going to lose. I'll be the outlier. I think that Republicans are going to get shellacked in the midterms, and they're going to lose the House. I think the Russian investigation, which people haven't taken that seriously, but I have followed very intensely for 2 years, is going to escalate. I think there will be more self-inflicted wounds. I think he'll attack. He can't help it. He's Donald Trump. There'll be way more self-inflicted wounds than anything the Democrats could ever do to him. I think more and more people will be galvanized because he'll keep offending them. I think the people who he surrounded himself with, like, say, Scott Pruitt, Ronnie Jackson, Betsy DeVos, and others, will keep effing up.
Yeah, but I don't think any of them will resign. I mean, Scott Pruitt probably.
It's a death by a thousand cuts. That's what I said last year. It's going to be a death by a thousand cuts. It'll all add up. Cut, 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 cut. And he'll bleed, and he will be like a big bloated orange corpse, just like dragged to the finish line. And because of his ego, he will run. Because the Republican Party is the cult of Trump, they will not stand up to him. They're going to lose. And I think it's going to be the fight between two geriatric white grandfathers, Uncle Biden versus Uncle Trump. And then we're just going to have to take Uncle Biden for 4 years if he survives.
So I've said this before, but my nightmare scenario, I don't know if it's the nightmare scenario or just the one that's most uncertain and kind of scary, or the constitutional crisis scenario, put it that way. And again, I'm like Swaraj, I'm probably totally wrong because everything I predicted is wrong. I don't think we're going to get to an election with Trump. I think that the Russian investigation, which is definitely escalating with the Cohen raid, I don't think we're going to get there. But here's where the crisis comes in. I don't think we're going to hit that crisis until after the midterms, which, again, in a worst case scenario, we have Trump, who has a vice president, unlike Nixon, is tied to the hip with him, was there at the beginning, was there through all the stuff, helped promote lies and helped defend him against true attacks. You get Pence and Trump impeached, as Trump said they would do if they took the House. Guess who the speaker's going to be? A Democrat. What happens then?
They'll burn it down. I think he's not going to get impeached. I think the only possible way is for his resignation if he chooses to resign, or handcuffs, or the bloated corpse. Because I think Republicans are all in, no matter what. And Democrats probably can invest all their time in just the impeachment proceedings, which will be locked up no matter what, probably due to the Senate. And there will be some. And I think you're very right to be afraid of the constitutional crisis based on the language and actions of Republicans. Look at the House Republican Intelligence Committee. Just look at this pathetic mess of a pathetic document they created. Look at the zero resistance and commentary from Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. Look at the attacks on the FBI and DOJ. Can you imagine the Republicans are the party attacking law enforcement, the threat of the deep state? So we should be, and I'm not alarmist, as you know, Susan, but I am a recovering attorney and I do pay attention. We should, as Americans, be really concerned about this possibility, because I don't think that Russian investigation is going away. I think they're going to uncover. I think they got Michael Cohen dead to rights. And I think
Cohen's so gone. Forget Trump. Whatever happened with Trump, Cohen's still dead.
Yeah. And Cohen, the fact that Cohen's exposed means Trump's exposed. That means Trump's finances are exposed. His contacts are exposed. That means he's exposed in New York. That means he's exposed with his connections to Russian oligarchs who have him. Because they bailed him out after the bankruptcy.
Not to mention all the other, we got Azerbaijan, we got Uruguay, we got Panama. So what happens then? What if they come out with proof of stuff that under any other president would mandate impeachment? Like, you have to impeach for the stuff. Something comes out where there's no option in a different world.
But he probably pardons himself.
Yeah.
Then what happens?
He's just going to stay in office.
You can't pardon impeachment.
I have no idea. I mean, I think they can't pardon.
But Republicans won't. And I think Republicans will fall down with the ship.
And at that point, there's nothing to stop him. At that point, literally, he knows he can do anything. And that's when the real crisis begins.
Yeah. And I think we might. And that's why 2018 is so important. Even if you're a Republican or a Libertarian, the reason why you're seeing Republican funders now go to Democrats is because there's enough patriots. This is the optimistic point I want to end on. There are still enough patriots out there, because I'm in D.C. and so is Siraj, right? And we're all here in this area, in the NatSec sector, in law enforcement, in media. People either Republican or Democrat or Libertarian, there's enough people who still value American democracy and the sacrifices that men and women have made for this country, and they realize how dangerous Trump is, that behind the scenes, they will resist. And I think you just need enough people to resist what inevitably will happen if you're paying attention, that they will not go down, that Republicans will go down with the ship. But if you can just make sure that he's crippled and his agenda is crippled at the very least, then he goes down by 2020 at the very least, and we maintain our institutions, inoculate ourselves, and hopefully bring in someone competent who puts America truly first. That's the hope.
I don't feel like this ends that way.
Let me be an optimist, Susan.
That doesn't seem like narratively sound based on what we have so far. But I will hope for that too.
My only prayer is really just for that the country remains afloat. I have no idea what's going to happen if there's going to be a constitutional crisis. I personally don't think that, with respect to whatever special counsel Robert Mueller has on President Trump right now, I don't know if it's really going to amount to an impeachment. If I feel like Democrats are somehow going to mess up 2018, and they're going to, you know, they may get control of the Senate, but they're not going to get control of the House. And then where do you go from there? If you have a Speaker of the House, Jim Jordan, what are you going to do then? Because that's a possibility right there. And people are talking about him possibly running for Speaker if Republicans maintain control of the House. And then all of a sudden, the Overton window for Republicans shifts even further to the right. And
which it will.
My God. I just had the worst nightmare. Speaker of the House, Steve King.
No, that will never happen. I mean, Steve King.
I will not say never.
I will not say never. But I say it's highly unlikely compared to, you know, a Mark Meadows or a Jim Jordan.
Yeah.
Or even a Louis Gomert, Louis Gomert, right?
Oh, good old Louis.
He ran against John Boehner in 2015. And because he did that, he basically got reassigned, or he got stripped of all his committee positions. And that was the first, I guess, example I saw recently leading up to Trump's run for office of any insurgency against the establishment. But one thing is interesting is that if Democrats mess this up, which knowing Democrats, there's a good chance that they will. Where do they go from there? I mean, I've heard, you know, Representative Jim Clyburn say they got a completely clean house of leadership. I mean, Democrats seem to have done
they go to California to breed.
You know, I mean, taking back the House and Senate, I mean, like majority that still wouldn't change the impeachment equation, is the other issue. They could win majorities in both the House and the Senate, and they still would not have enough to impeach unless Republicans are on board. So literally until enough white Americans decide that they'd rather have a non-criminal in the office more than they want to have like a white nationalist in office, nothing's going to change.
A final point. It's always so lovely and heartwarming to talk to both of you. I feel so elated afterwards. But I think what I've said is, and I say it in a solemn way, not in a mocking way or condescending way. I think the only way that his base learns is through pain. They will have to suffer. I have kids. You tell kids, don't fall in the ditch. They don't listen to you. Sometimes they fall in the ditch. And after their elbow bleeds, they look at you with tears in their eyes. And you're like, dude, I told you. And then they'll learn. And a third of them will say, we were wrong. He was a con man. We got gypped. A third of them, the next third, will realize he's a fraud, but pride will keep them from publicly saying it, but they won't come out and vote, or they'll vote for Democrats. The last third is the one we should be really worried about. They're the ones who, even after they fall in the ditch, will come out of the ditch and blame women, Mexicans, Muslims, and the gays. And that's the group we're going to have to confront.
On the other hand, what if, in fact, most of them would prefer to fall in the ditch so long as it meant America was whiter?
The pain quotient will get to the point where once they lose their home and their jobs and their benefits, they will realize we need something else.
And this is the optimistic scenario.
Yeah, that's from Bush. So the fact that a black man was elected, people forget, I'm old enough. How the hell did this country elect a black biracial son of a Kenyan Muslim? Because of the worst recession and economic crisis is the Great Depression. Foreclosures all across the country. America's approval rating like plummeted all across the world. Two costly, murderous wars. And an idiot in the White House by the name of George W. Bush. He was a moron. Let's not forget. And then finally, people are like, you know what? Let's go with the black guy. So maybe our next president is going to be like a lesbian, vegan Latina, the daughter of undocumented immigrants who converts to Islam.
And is transgender. Can't forget that little factoid.
I will not bet on that, but, you know, maybe. But the pain would have to be pretty extreme to get us there.
There's going to be a lot of pain, guys. There's going to be a lot of pain.
Yeah, so are we at war with Iran yet? Anyone know? Anyone checking Twitter?
We have 2 more weeks.
2 more weeks to find out.
Netanyahu took a DeLorean and brought back his graphs, where he has a secret intelligence, apparently, how Iran is lying and is going to create a nuclear bomb. And so him and MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, and Mattis and everyone else, well, not Mattis, but Bolton, have a big boner for a war with Iran. But let's hope we can save them from priapism.
Yeah, well, no matter what the Americans do, I'm sure the Europeans, Russians, and Chinese will stay in the deal.
Yeah. People realize this is dangerous. And I threw Mattis under the bus, but even Mattis of all people, guys, the war hawk for Iran, even he now is saying, wait, the Iran deal is actually kind of working. Give diplomacy a chance. So that's how skewed the Overton window has gone, that Mattis is now seen as a moderate on Iran. Awesome.
I will maintain Mattis is probably the best appointment or best nomination Trump has ever made to his cabinet.
Mad Dog, our fate is in your hands.
Bar none. He hasn't disappointed, at least to this point so far. He's been always, exactly as Wajahat put it, he's been become the moderate, the rational voice in the Trump administration. Who would have thought that would happen? Mad Dog is the rational voice.
On that happy note, we'll return next week to see if Mattis has saved us all or not.
Thank you, guys.
See you, guys.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.